conversation. Mike Welch joining us, and obviously with the stakes dotting the card. No Welch yet? Okay. Well, we'll get Mike in here. I'll mention, because generally we wait for the clocking info to augment the maiden races, and I'll quickly run down some of the some of the sibling strength that's involved in this seventh. Probably not getting in today, but Prayer Book for Todd Bletcher, and this is the Stone Street Uncle Mo colt that debuted in January. The Have to Run Happy, and Harold Ventures and Stone Street are partnered up, was a $500,000 as a Keeneland yearling. And those that are in the body of the race from the outside in, advanced placement. Here's the Ammerman's latest from Miss Chapin, a point of entry colt, the half to Coffee Clink. So from the outside, and actually this is this is a colt that came out of the Kentucky Faro race, Kentucky Faro's maiden win in December. You've also got a first-time starter for Chad for the Hatfields, Christine and Phil Hatfield, a flatter colt out of SS Pinafore, Joe Minor bred, and this is a half to Plainsman. The very nice, not a half, actually. I take that back. It's a, if it's a flatter, that's a full to Plainsman. And I mentioned Tis a Magician, who, of course, is running tomorrow as well at Santa Anita. And Avenue, this is the Woodford bred $450,000 quality road. LaPenta and Eclipse partnered up. And Avenue's the, as I said, the baby brother of Tis a Magician. So those are among the nicely bred participants in the seventh. There's also Larry Goichman has got Action Jackson making a second start, first as a three-year-old. This is his Union Rags colt out of J. Ray, the nice New York bred, of course, that he had. This is a New York bred. And there's also Barkley Tag with Sure Thing Stables, Carpe Diem, Seizing the Dream. That was a nice stakes mare, the dam, unbelievable dream, a kid alpha. Mike Welch is with us now. Mike, I was just making people aware of some of the siblings' strength in that seventh race.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting, it is an interesting race. Obviously, the reading, you know, points out the bottom horse, Advanced Placement, but the post is kind of a head, you know, head scratcher there if you want to play this horse. I think that morning line of 8-1 is way out of hand. So it's ran well first time, got in trouble, galloped out nicely. It's a half to a couple of multiple graded stakes wing turf horses that Brian had. But post 12, you know, you really got to work out a trip from there. So he would have been my top pick for sure if he had, had drawn anywhere near inside. Then he could still certainly win it. I think he's the best horse in there on paper.
Let's talk about the stakes, Mike, and because there's, you know, a good sequence of they didn't come up big, but they're competitive. Start with the Holy Bull and your thoughts in here.
Well, you know, as I wrote in my advance today, a couple of these horses that are going to be the favorites in here, so the trainers would rather have not rushed them into stakes coming off of maiden wins, talking about Prime Factor and Shook's Good Horse Greatest Honor. They were hoping to get allowance race. They might have wound up in the same allowance race, had an allowance race gone, but it didn't. So here they are. Todd obviously has a little more to worry about. Prime Factor, only one start. Hasn't been past six furlongs. Plenty of potential, obviously. So he said talent-wise he's not the concern, but experience-wise he is. He could get loose on the lead in here, which, you know, on this racetrack's a big edge. Willie Boy probably will give him some early, or could anyway give him some early challenge if he wishes to. So that could be a bit of a key there. The same with the mount. He wanted to run him in an allowance race also, and wound up coming in this spot. Boots of Beak was going to be his main Holy Bull player, and as I reported yesterday, he's going to be out for a while, so that's unfortunate. He would have been the big name. He'd have been the favorite in here, but at the Todd still can't win his third Holy Bull. The greatest honor, though, to me, I think this horse has progressed so nicely. I know it took him four times to win his maiden, but his maiden win was very impressive. Not as much on paper, but just the way he did it. He almost got knocked down on the first turn by that horse of Ralph Nix that day that went wrong on the right after the start of the race. He overcame it, overcame a bad trip. He bred to go a mile and a 16th, a mile and an eighth, a mile and a quarter, a mile and a half. I mean, there's... his mare's damn foaled two Belmont winners, so you know the distance is no problem. To me, greatest honor is the right horse in here. If, you know, he gets enough pace help, you know, one thing about Gulfstream, we know, you know, your horse that wants to come from behind, it's not the easiest of tasks here. So that's the issue with him. But I think the race probably boils down to those two, although there's some other nice horses in here. Look, Papatoo ran well, got a big number in the Mucho Macho Man, so did Austin Jerry, although he's going to be parked out in the tough post going a mile and a 16th here. Willie Boy's 2 for 2, as we noted, but that was against Florida Breds. Tarantino trying to dirt for the first time is almost unbeaten in 3 starts on turf, sitting on goal for Dale, getting a little class relief. So it's an interesting race. No really huge names yet, but I think after tomorrow maybe one or two of these will be.
Well, and that's the intriguing part of the group, and a couple of the, you know, the odd candidates. Some thoughts on Tarantino. I'm looking forward to Don Harris's view of those workouts since he's been at Palmetto's since November.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, you see this time of year. I mean, and Mutabik was an example, too, of horses that have excelled on the turf. They're trying the dirt to see if they, you know, can transfer that form over to the dirt, because obviously ultimately you'd rather be shooting for the Derby in a few months than a grade two turf stake somewhere. So we'll see. I'm trying to remember. I saw the work that Donald turned in. I can't recall at the top of my head. I don't think there's anything that jumped off the page at me, but I'll have to go look at that again. But the horse deserves the chance, and he's going to get it, so we'll see if he handles the dirt as well as he's run on the turf. He's a nose away from being undefeated. And he's He's been 2 turns several times. So that's a big edge. A lot of these in here, big question mark, going 2 turns for the first time.
I know it's a big ask, excuse me, but I like the fact that Alvarado gets aboard Willie Boy for Jeff Engler. And this horse has done nothing wrong in those two performances. You know, obviously, restricted company against those Florida bred races that Mike Lakow offers, but any thoughts about this gelding?
Yeah, there's a lot to ask. Is right. I mean, yeah, it's a big jump in class. He's not been beyond 6 furlongs, so he's going 2 turns and going a lot further than he's ever been. And it looks like he's headed for a duel at best with Prime Factor, because I can't, you know, I mean, maybe High Rad sits back if Willie Boy sends and sits off him and lets Willie Boy, you know, cut out the pace because he's got that inside post. But, you know, it looks to me, speed-wise, that they're pretty equal as far as that goes, coming out of 6 furlong sprints when they're both on or forcing the pace, fast pace. So, that to me, Willie Boy, there's a lot of question marks he's got to answer, and he's going to have to also work out a trip. Maybe he's this good, but you'll get rewarded if he wins.
How about the status of Sitting on Go? Jay was with us earlier, Mike, and you know, going all the way back to the juvenile and the jockey club, Jay's of the opinion that, you know, ultimately he'll be back around 1 turn. He's been working at Gulfstream, so you've been watching him, and I haven't really seen much yet about you know, what Dale's thoughts are about how he's wintered.
Well, you know Dale's theories. You know, you can't win these races if you're not in them. So there he is. And he is the only graded stakes winner in the field. So there's a lot to like about him. And, in that respect, he's been around 2 turns twice, although not successfully. His works have been good. They haven't been great. Post 8 isn't the greatest. But then with this horse's running style, it probably won't matter. I'm guessing he and Greatest Honor are both going to drop back to last. And next to last, they're in the early running from out there. I just think, you know, you take a closer of the two, Greatest Honor, you know, distance-wise, has more right to get the mile and a 16th successfully than Sitting on Go does. And, you know, Dale's barn's been a little cold, too. You know, we know Dale's barn can be streaky at times. Right now, he's not in a very good streak, so we'll see. He's only got one win out of 22 starts at the meet. He had a first-time starter the other day, been working lights out, ran terrible, which I didn't take as a good sign. I didn't talk to him. I don't know if you know, the horse bled or something happened there last Sunday, I believe it was. But, you know, the barn's a little cold right now. We'll see. I mean, if the race falls apart at the end, I mean, he should be coming on, you know, the late stages. So not one of my top three picks, but or maybe he was. You know, I might have picked him third, actually, to tell you the truth, now that I think of it. But certainly, greatest honor to me is the horse to beat in here, if he can get any pace help at all.
Mike, you bring a question in about bleeding, and you know, I jumped right into the discussion about tomorrow's action, but of course we talked last Friday into the weekend and into the Pegasus card. And by the way, I got a very nice email yesterday from a player who really focused in on your enthusiastic and you know, a virtual, you pulled kind of a Namath with Nick's Go, and he utilized that to great advantage himself. So that was nice. But I have heard from some people that attend to horses in various manners, vets and others that do work. I understand there were a number of horses that bled that came off Lasix last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it almost was inevitable. It's going to happen. I mean, the problem is for horse players, you really don't know which ones it's going to be. There's really no way to tell unless you have a contact with a barn and a guy tells you this horse has a propensity to bleed. It's really tough. That's what the problem is now with this Lasix on, Lasix off situation we're going through. It's the same thing now with all the two-year-olds turning three that were not on Lasix last year. Now they're all first-time Lasix. Some it's going to help, some it's not, but you really don't know. You know, normally I'm handicapping, I might mention, you know, first-time Lasix today, it's an edge, but you can't in these races because they're all first-time Lasix, and I'm just guessing like everybody else, you know, which ones it's going to move forward, and it makes things hard. I mean, this has been well noted by, you know, horse players when this situation was coming up, the possibility of, you know, these Lasix on and off situations, that it could hurt the handle because, you know, bigger players are not going to play with as much confidence when they have that unknown factor involved in their handicapping process. So whether it has or hasn't hurt it, I don't know. I mean, business is good here, but for me, I can't play with as much confidence. You get to a situation where, you know, with the two-year-olds now turning three in a race like this, they've all been, you know, no Lasix all along, so it's not a big difference. But you get to a race like the Pegasus last week where all these horses, these older horses, have run on Lasix their whole careers, and now all of a sudden they're off. You really don't know. You know, obviously it didn't affect Nick's Go, but, you know, I talked to Brad Cox about it after the fact, and he said, I didn't think it would be a problem, but until they get through it, you really don't know. He said now he's confident that moving forward, if he would decide to go to Dubai or even later in the season running in the, you know, races here with no Lasix, and there's going to be a lot of them in those stakes categories at a lot of places, he's at least a little more confident that his horse can handle it right now. So, you know, it's makes things tough. It's already tough. It's tough enough for handicapping.
Exactly, you know, right?
Let's settle on a horse that you really like and bet him with confidence. You're a little less confident in these certain situations. It really doesn't apply in these stakes here on Saturday because they're all three-year-olds and were racing, you know, without Lasix's two-year-olds. So there's not a big change there.
Rather than talk about the turf races, I'll package them together, the Kitten's Joy and the Swedish Chant. Let's talk about the girls' main track three-year-old race, the Forward Gal, the grade three, and we've got a couple of major players, but there's a couple of nibblers that are floating around in here that I thought need to be discussed, and I'm just looking to see what you did in here, and obviously Todd's Shadwell, homebred Zagil, the first part of the conference, the first horse to talk.
Yeah, you know, I have to think that Again, too, you're going from a, you know, a maiden win to a stake, but it's the same distance. She's proven she can go 7/8. She ran awful fast. I mean, and she did it very impressively. Her works have been good coming out of it. She's perfectly posted outside. It's hard to go against her. Would I bet on her with even money or whatever she's going to be? No, I wouldn't. Lady Traveler, you know, for Dale. This horse has been training really well. I like what I've seen from her in the morning. She's had a series of 5-furlong works. I like the way she's finished and galloped out in those works again. And, you know, she's also turning back from a couple of 2-turn races in 7/8, so she should really be fit and ready to kick on at the end here. The big question being, again, you know, Dale's a little cold right now, and sometimes that can be a factor until Barnes, and not only Dale, all Barnes, you know, they go hot, they go cold, and you want to stay away from the cold streets and catch them when they're on their hot streak. But from what I've seen in the morning, she's doing very well, and you know, I think she'll be coming on fast at the end. You know, Corey will try to get her that inside trip if he can. That's what he does best.
I got to mention one of our favorites going you know, back a handful of years. Anita Cawley has got 3 Tipsy Chicks coming off the maiden win in November at Churchill and starting the season here, which seems like a vote of confidence from Ian Wilkes, the Medaglia d'Oro filly out of On Fire Baby, her absolutely wonderful race mare.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, on what she's done as a 2-year-old, you got to respect her. She's been away. Maybe she's going to need a race. Another situation with a cold Kentucky barn. I mean, Ian Wilkes is winless since he's gotten here, too. So same situation that, you know, you think about with Dale. You got to think about with Ian. You know, wait until he wins a few to really back anything he's got with confidence. But, you know, 7/8 looks like it should help her moving forward. But maybe this isn't quite the right spot coming off the layoff against couple of more seasons, you know, not more season, but horses with better figures and just horses that seem a little more appealing to me.
Fair enough. Let's talk about those 2 turf races, and we'll work from the second half of the card. The Swedish Chant for the fillies going the mile on the grass, and this has got a nice group. Again, the theme of the weekend is, you know, not big stake fields, but some very well-matched sets of horses.
Yeah, I mean, look, Cone Leam is probably going to be the favorite. Why not? You know, she's coming off a stakes win over this racetrack. She got loose on the lead that day. Interesting situation here. Honey Pants was a 3-2 favorite in that race in the Ginger Brew. And Irad broke okay and opted to kind of ease back. Gave Cone Leam the lead, probably hoping someone else would do the dirty work for him up front. Didn't get that help. Honey Pants finished, you know, well once she it was able to get running. And I think that's going to be the key here, too. Will he, you know, maybe get more aggressive tomorrow and not let Con Lima go? Will he hope that someone like Domain Expertise or some of the others with some speed, Lioness of Brittany, who should certainly show speed coming off those sprints, you know, helps her out with Con Lima? I think if Con Lima gets any pace challenge here and Honey Pants can just sit off him, I like Honey Pants in here to reverse that decision last week with Cone Leam. I see there's a lot of support for White Frost around. Made a very impressive 2-turn turf debut in New York. Got a big number. You know, if she can repeat that and move forward, shipping down here to the warmer weather here at Gulfstream and over this turf course, at least we know Honey Pants and Cone Leam can handle the course. But it looks like she does have a lot of potential moving forward. So I would think of her in the mix too. But I Director's Cut is working very well. You see that 46-1. Mark Cassie's off to a terrific start here. She'll have to work out a trip from the 8 post, but probably going to get some kind of a stalking situation going there. But to me, I'm going to give Honey Pants another chance.
You know, I got to at least mention this Lioness of Brittany for Steve Claseris, and Claseris having a notably strong winter, coming off the 5-furlong sprint, absolutely is going to be the one to chase.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're probably right. I think that's why, as another reason why I went to Honey Pants. It looks like she's going to get that help with Cone Leam. And you know, Cone Leam the big numbers loose on the lead might be a different story of having to chase. And you're right, Linus and Brittany coming over those sprints, that fast sprint, probably going to be on the lead. But, you know, will she go a mile? Will she go a mile if she's pressured by Cohen Lima? I mean, you got to believe Cohen Lima won't be too far behind her. You know, again, you're going to get paid if she can answer those questions. But stretching out from 5/8 to a mile against obviously much more talented competition is a lot to ask of her.
Talk about the boys' race, and this comes early in the card, the Kitten's Joy, and Kentucky Pharaoh, and Never Surprised, you know, at a glance, seem like the two to, you know, vie for favoritism and for honors. The two inside, though, Chess's Dream and It's a Gamble, have got a couple of things to recommend them.
Yeah, I took a chance here with Chess's Dream, and again, it's the pace situation, and you just don't know what's going to happen early on. We know Julian isn't a send kind of rider on Kentucky Thorough, but, you know, from her first two races, she's run terrific, loose on the lead. And we know one thing we do know with Julian, when he gets on the lead, he's tough to pass, but won't be that easy here. And same with Never Surprised. Her big race around two turns was loose on the lead. Make ahead everything her own way. May not have everything her own way here. So will they be able to repeat those big numbers? I'm guessing Never Surprised will be the favorite off that 90 buyer at Aqueduct. But, again, that was a 90 buyer with no pace pressure. Going to be pace pressure here. So I did. I took a shot with Chess's Dream. I mean, this horse has always been well meant for the turf. Got beat a couple of times, close races early. Seems to be improving. Was an easy maiden winner. I know it was against Florida Breds. I like the way he's been training on the main track coming up to this race, so I could see him jumping forward. Obviously, from a figure standpoint, he's going to have to jump way forward. But if the pace situation works out for him, I think he may be worth taking the shot here at 7, 6, 7, 8 to 1, somewhere in there.
Talk about the Swale, and you know, this race, it's presence, Mike, is different than it used to be. I mean, at one time it was a place for aspiring Florida Derby types and Fountain of Youth types to, you know, ease into the season. Now, without really a role toward Derby points, it just feels like a place for, you know, the 3-year-old sprint crowd to, you know, get some honors.
Yeah, I mean, this race is interesting. Again, you know, your favorites are all horses that have done their best on the lead. So we're just going to have to see how that situation plays out, what strategies employed. Poppy's Pride, 3 in a row, all wire to wire, likable, huge effort. 2 back going a mile. The Poppy's Pride races are shorter races. He may have the most speed of anyone in here, but from the rail, you know, Luis might think his hand is force a little bit with likable, and then you have By George on the outside, wire to wire, first time out, huge win in New York for Christophe Clement. Irad out there, I'm guessing Irad might take a little hold and let the two inside go, and then Drain the Clock was just super impressive, winning the Limehouse. I love that horse going into the race, train just unbelievably good. Hasn't done much with him. Sappy's kind of backed off him a little bit coming out of that race, just one easy maintenance half mile. But he might be in the best position to sit off those other three and make one run in 7/8. I don't think it's going to be a problem for him at all. So I picked Drain the Clock. But, again, as a horse player, you can look at this race over and over and over again. But once the gate opens, you know, and try to predict the pace scenario. But once the gate opens, that pace scenario might not develop, you know, the way you think it's going to. So we'll see. I mean, if there's a big collapse, you know, Dale's got two out there that look like they're going to be the come from behind is King's Ovation and Ultimate Badger. But I picked Drain the Clock. So I just like, you know, I've seen a lot of him, and I just like what I've seen of him all along.
He's in McLean's Music, and you see the Slam Dunk racing on the ownership line and the familiar basketball blue, black, orange silks. Nick Casado himself bred Drain the Clock. So it doesn't necessarily look like a homebred to people, but Slam Dunk is Nick and his partners. And again, a six-horse field, but it's going to be contested, and it should be. It should be interesting. Goes as the sixth race, so mid card. It you know, it's
probably not inconceivable, too, to see someone, if they run well in here, to come out of here and, you know, maybe take a shot at
maybe
the Mountain Youth, too. You know, we've seen that before. So we'll just it's an interesting day tomorrow. You know, you like this kind of card. It's early three-year-old stakes, but, you know, something's going to come out of each of these races that is going to be a big factor moving forward as we hit the next wave of three-year-old races, the middle wave. And then, of course, you get to the big dance, the Florida Derby and the others. And then next week, too, looking forward to seeing, I believe, we're going to see the Eclipse Award winner here next week for Butch Reed. I believe that race is next week. And both those fillies, the two fillies from the Breeders' Cup, the 1-2 fillies, because I believe both of them are heading here next week. So that's the word I've gotten. So we'll see. We'll see.
Excellent. All right. Well, and I haven't really looked ahead to Sunday. Anything of note Sunday?
You know, they drew the entry so late yesterday. I haven't even looked at it. I just grabbed the PPs now. I'm finishing up Saturday's workout report now, and I'm going to start working on Sunday moving forward later today. I'm sorry, I was talking to the maybe about the Royal Delta. That race is not. I'm sorry, not the Royal Delta. What's the race for the Phillies coming up? The Devona Dale. No, that's
the Devona Dale.
Yeah, that's not for a few more weeks. I don't know why I thought it was next week. But
all right, but we're still looking forward to getting Vequist back into action.
That's the race they've been pointing for. She's been working on a regular basis. That's the race I think that they're coming back in.
And day out of the office.
And a day out of the office, yeah. I think both of them are pointing for that one, from what
Excellent.
I understand.
Excellent. Well, Mike, this was terrific. What time? 4 or 5 o'clock for the report?
Yeah, it should definitely be up by then. It might be up a little earlier today. I'm pretty well along on it. I've got it almost finished. So once I turn it in, it takes about an hour and a half for them to turn it around and get it up there.
Excellent.
So we've been meeting that deadline pretty good so far this whole meet.
Well, and before, as we wrap up, before we go, I've got to mention again, I tweeted it at the time, but the reason I included Pacific Gale, you know, an A essentially in the multi-race wagers was off of the report. Donald Harris had glowing things to say about her preparation, and then it was confirmed even minutes after the race when John Kimmel said, and then he explained on the show Monday, everything that went into her being so good on Saturday, winning the inside information.
Yeah, no. You tip my hat to Donald. I mean, I don't know if I'd have made her an A even off a big work like that, considering she hadn't won a race in 2.5 years. But he did have a great report on her and $36. He also had a great report on Brendan Walsh's horse that ran off the screen, as well as Kelly Breen's filly the next day that ran off the screen. B pluses on all of those horses. You got 7-1, 5-1, and then 17-1 on Pacific Gale. So, Donald, I'm surprised, is back working. He should. I was afraid if he bet all three of them, he might just hand in his resignation and go retire. But apparently not. But those reports were spot on all three of those horses last
week.
No,
they're a big help because, you know, she was coming off the, you know, layoff and really, you know, has been kind of wind shy and you know, felt on paper like, you know, a spot where, you know, she might pick up a piece, but. Considering her as a win candidate was absolutely the key, and she was, I mean, the price was ridiculous on her.
Well, I mean, again, it's the same, you know, situation. You got a horse that hasn't won a race in so long. It makes it a little tough to play her with any real confidence, even with that big work. She had worked well in the past before, although I know John said that's about as good as she's worked in a long time, and that's. Donald's comment, I think, was as good as he's seen her work at all, at least this winter, and maybe he's gotten to see her in the past, too, at Saratoga. So, I mean, I'm making her an A. I got to give you credit for that, the leaping overboard. I picked her third in my picks just off of the work, you know, figuring if she does run her best race, she's capable of winning. But it worked out well. Everything was great. And like I said, those two-year-olds in that two-year-old race last week, the 2B plus works, Brendan's horse and Chad Brown's Half to Justify. They ran 1-2. You got $105 exact or something in there.
Amazing.
On the two best works of
Amazing.
The race. So, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it worked out well. Doesn't always, you know, they don't always run true to their works, but those horses certainly did.
Well, and you're, you know, in a lot of cases, you're just looking at pedigree, you're looking at some trainer stats, and you're looking for any hint you can get. And, you know, especially when it comes to the more obscure connections or, you know, people that aren't necessarily, if it's a first out type, you know, Brendan isn't somebody necessarily that's got a first out horse, you know, keyed up. You know, he also,
yeah.
You weren't, you know, you probably weren't watching it all, but at Tampa, he pulled a stunt at Tampa with Blue Cat. He managed to get a first out winner from Big Blue Kitten, the first one yet of Big Blue Kitten's progeny to win first out. And I would have liked to have had some help there when it came to the cross country pick five, because he upset the apple cart. Brendan did there
as well. You're right about Brendan. I mean, he does not really tighten the screws 100% on any horse he runs first time. And he admitted that. When I spoke to him Monday, he knew the horse was working well and he expected him to run good. Of course, you never expect him to run that good first time out. But, you know, that's why he's so confident that this horse, you know, there's a lot more left for this horse to move forward, because he said he wasn't 100% cranked up for that race. And, again, as a better, you know, you see good works and you know a horse is doing well, then you know the trainer's propensity maybe not have him 100% first time.
Exactly.
So you got questions to answer, and it was probably one of the reasons, you know, you got 7-8-1, whatever it was that he finally went off, just because of that alone. But he's obviously a special horse, and, you know, a horse we're going to look forward to seeing here later in the meet, whether it be an allowance race next time or right back into the Fountain of Youth. I think that is still to be determined. Or, you know, they could take the Tampa route too if they wanted to go a little easier if there's no allowance race. That's the issue here, is getting these allowance races to go for the three-year-olds. Obviously, it was a problem. That's why Prime Factor and Greatest Honor are in the Holy Bull. If Todd and Sugar had their druthers, they would be running an allowance race this weekend and pointing for the Fountain of Youth instead. So it remains to be seen what's going to happen down the road when Brendan gets ready to wheel back. And same on the Philly side with the horse of Kelly Breen's, the one on Sunday, the filly that ran so well. She got a little lost in the shuffle. I mean, Brendan's horse won on Pegasus Day. Kelly won on the Sunday afterward. Nobody really paid as much attention. She ran off the screen and got an 88 buyer. Prevalence got an 89 buyer. So pretty much a carbon copy of the two races over the weekend. I think both were 7/8, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot to look forward to, and that's always the case here. You know, this time of year, a lot to look forward to as we move closer and closer toward the Derby and the Oaks.
That was the Gary and Mary West slumber party.
Yes, yeah, the Gary and Mary West home brand. Yeah.
You know, and since you mentioned this, is there a number back yet on Soup and Sandwich?
If you got 1 minute, I could probably hold on.
Yeah, I can maybe pull it up too.
On the computer, yeah.
Yeah, I'll pull it up.
That was a nice
performance.
It really was. You know, the horse of Brian Lynch's was really well touted, had good workout reports. Except, you know, the last work kind of bore out, as Donald said on the turn, didn't hold a straight path. Maybe that was a clue that he wasn't going to fire as well as his previous words had indicated. But he was bet the even money with the late scratch. And but Soup and Sandwich had good works, good common, had good gate work with two others in there. Donald had given him a B off that, but with good comments, and it always pays to read those comments carefully. And it was an outstanding performance. I don't think he's going to get an 88 or an 89 like the two from last weekend. I'm just
no figure yet, Mike. Numbers
not up yet.
No, numbers not up yet. We're talking about the Into Mischief Cold Mrs. Weber homebred out of the Tappet Mare Super Scoop. Soup and Sandwich was good yesterday for
yes,
Cassie.
Yes, I saw your little tweet there. That was very clever.
Couldn't resist. Couldn't resist. I'm a sap.
That was a state bred race, though. So, you know, a little bit different. Those were Florida breds as opposed to the open races last week. So probably going to get see something in the high 70s, low 80s would be my guess just off the top of my head. But we'll see. We'll see. I think I don't know if Randy Moss is still doing the numbers here or if Mark Hopkins is doing them during the main meet. I know Randy does them sometimes during part of the year, but maybe Mark Hopkins is back doing it. I expect we'll have a number up before too much longer.
Mike Welsh, everybody, DRF Welsh, another big Saturday at Gulfstream Park tomorrow. And, of course, the action today probably gets plenty of attention with the cancellations in New York and California. Mike, thanks a lot.
Handles are going to be big today. You can bet.
Yeah,
that.
You would think so.
The weather's beautiful, too. It's a gorgeous day. Sun's out. Temperatures in about the mid-60s, the high 60s today. So perfect day for racing.
Mike Welsh, everybody. Mike, thanks a lot. We'll talk next week.
Okay.
Mike Welsh, folks. We'll stay right here. We got 15 minutes to close out, and just in time, because Keith Shamblin joining us normally after the Eclipse Awards. Keith and the NTRA staff would be hustling to Vegas and getting ready for NHC, but we've got quite a run-up to close out 2020 when it comes to the National Horse Players Championship. And Keith, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? I love listening to Mike Welsh. When I was in college in Boston, I worked 5 days a week at Suffolk Downs in the press box, and he had a tip sheet called the Fox up at Suffolk Downs at that point. It was great.
I love it. That's great. Yeah. I haven't heard that referenced, the Fox. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. We go way back. That was 1981, 82, and 83.
Wow. Oh, that's funny. We're going to have to start calling. Yeah. We're going to have to start calling Welsh the Fox. I love it.
The Fox. Yep.
Well, speaking of stealthy performances, Keith, we're going to kick off the 2021 run up and the NHC this year starts this weekend. Things closed out last Saturday, and it had potential to be close, and it ended up amazingly close and harrowing. Give everybody the final result from the tour.
Well, they're not final yet. We have a bit of an audit period, but Sally Goodall scored her in the final weekend and overtook everyone in the tour and is the unofficial tour champ at this point. Of course, she had just a fabulous year, and it's amazing. I think this will be her 18th NHC out of 22, might be her 19th. It's just an incredible run, and she is definitely a contender to be Hall of Fame material based on her past performances. But it was as close a tour as we've had ever, and just amazing. And Dylan Donnelly was right there all year long, and I know it had to be heartbreaking to be overtaken on the last weekend and one of the very last contests. But Sally, it's amazing. Just an incredible performance.
22,330, and Dylan, who was so consistent, all year, and so was Sally. I mean, she was involved, right along. I'm looking at, the breakdowns. So 22,330, 22,276 for Dylan Donnelly, and once it goes official, 100,000 for Sally, 50,000 for Dylan. Third was Tom Blosser, 21,335. He had he was right there, virtually every time I looked. Fourth, Brett Weiner, as well. Somebody that's an absolute institution. And David Wolf was fifth. Kevin Engelhart, sixth. Greg Lewis, seventh. Paul Kush, eighth. and Kenny Jordan, who had a very good, you know, fall and into the winter, was ninth, and Kevin Cox was 10th. Quick rundown of five more. Chris Olsen, 11th. Phil Hodebeck, 12th. Jim Sivas, congratulations to Jim, 13th. Steve Gravina, 14th, and Jim Connors, 15th. Your top 15 in the tour.
Some new names, some familiar names. It was a good mix. It really was a good mix this year. And so close, so close.
How about we got to acknowledge Chris Andauer, who won the rookie tour.
Absolutely, you know, and it's great to see them perform and perform so well and win a little bit of cash in it, you know, by taking the rookie leaderboard. It's great.
We also had the Winter Challenge for the last 2 months, December and January, and in here, and again, I think these are all unofficial. Greg Lewis and James Lisowski run 1-2. Don Allen, Paul Kalia, and Dan DePonte, the top five and money earners in the Winter Challenge.
Yep, that proved to be very popular, and of course, we've got another event coming up this next weekend or in 2 weekends when we typically would have the NHC. We've added an online kind of qualifier that weekend that's drawing a lot of attention as well. So, you know, it's been a great year competition-wise, and it's also it's been just crazy, you know, with COVID. It's like everything else. Everything is upside down. So it's amazing. But we keep on going. We keep on going.
Well, and there is as well 75 seats that are going out to the non-qualifiers, the top 75 tour point getters. And it's interesting, there's some notable names that ended up getting a seat this way, and you know, I see Trey Stiles in here, and Dave Thule. Look at Dave Thule, Gary Fenton, and Fantini, Ed Peters picks one up this way, and so forth.
It's just another way that, you know, some people call it getting in through the back door, but I think a lot of people see it as a viable alternative. When you,
sure,
you play year in and year out, and you say, geez, this is my best chance to get to Vegas and take advantage of it. So we always see some familiar names, and you think to yourself, boy, I can't believe Trey Stiles didn't qualify or win a contest. He's such a fantastic player. But, you know, everybody gets in a different way, and some years these guys are knocking on the door almost each and every weekend they play, it seems like, but they never get over the hump and actually land a berth in the NHC, but the cumulative score at the end of the year pays off.
Well, and it part of that is certainly, undoubtedly, Keith, players, you know, regular players that are, you know, year in, year out participants, certainly the way in which the on-site schedule was, you know, so badly impacted, and you know, players that make regular stops along the way during the season at racetracks, and they had that option, you know, kind of, you know, obviously taken away from them.
No doubt about it. I mean, it was just such a bizarre season. And, you know, we really didn't, after the second week in March, we really didn't have another on-track contest of any kind until the fall. And then they kind of started coming back with just a smattering of on-track contests, most with limited attendance on track. And, it was really just amazing that we were able to pull off a tour at all. But, you know, thank goodness that there was online play throughout much of the, well, the entire pandemic, but I think it kept everybody going and gave everybody something to look forward to along with playing the ponies during these last 9 months, because without it, I don't know what a lot of people would have done, being stuck at home and having to not being able to go to the races in almost, you know, every jurisdiction that I can think of. It's just incredible.
Well, the 2021 qualification season officially starts today at horseplayers.com, right? You got we got the kickoff tour opportunity, two seats today, on Sunday as well. There's the online, and I don't, is Monmouth, is that first Monmouth qualifier, are they a go tomorrow?
I think they're going to try to have it. Yes.
So, wow.
Yeah, that'll be great. So
that it's part
they're
of
going
their.
To do, you know, even though they're simulcasting, they're going to have a host a contest, and looking forward to. You know, they've always been just a great participant, great partner in the NHC, and they're back at it early in 2021. So great chance for folks in that part of the country to either go to the track, or I'm sure there'll be an online component to that as well.
Well, and we'll get start to get visits in with the Brian and the coordinators around the country. There right now, there other than Monmouth, there really isn't anything that is obvious on the schedule early in the year, and with restrictions still at so many venues, it's just Lone Star got one in, and that was Brandon Lee, and they pulled that off, and we'll keep everybody informed, but for now still tons of opportunities online, and in terms of the coordination that you and Michelle and Holly are doing, Keith, is there any any specifics or any news about the venues that you guys have heard so far?
Well, we're just everybody is slowly coming back online, but a lot of this is we're really dependent on how quickly the vaccine rolls out and how quickly horse racing, just everyday racing, can somehow return to normalcy. And when it returns to normalcy, the NHC will return to normalcy. But we're still in the midst of this pandemic, and the same holds true for plans for Las Vegas. We have every intention of being there in late August to host the 2021 NHC, but a lot of things have to fall into place for that to happen by late August, and then of course we'll revert back to the normal schedule in 2022 with hopefully a February NHC. Actually, it's a January, I think.
Yeah, it is the last weekend of January. Yeah,
we're going the weekend before the Super Bowl. We're back to that date due to a scheduling conflict in Las Vegas. That's what we're now pointing to as it relates to the tour, and if we could just, I'm hopeful that by early summer, late spring, early summer, we see a lot of these on-track contests begin to come back.
We'll keep everybody informed. Keith Shamlin, everybody, NTRA, and the National Horse Players Championship. And the new season starts today. Thanks to Keith and Mike Welsh, Nick Tamaro, Jay Pribman, James Scully, and Hammer at Oaklawn. And we absolutely whistled by. And good luck to everybody the weekend. We'll catch up with you Monday at the races, Sirius XM. Thanks. Talk to you Monday.
Thank you.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.